I'm Mark Caro, and welcome to episode 165 of Caro Pop, sponsored by Revolution Brewing. Our guest this week is Macy Stewart, half of the duo Phenome, and one of those musicians who can do almost anything. She's a classically trained pianist and violinist who wrote her first piece for an orchestra at age 11. She still creates string arrangements for herself, such as on her 2021 solo album, Mouthful of Glass. She also taught herself acoustic guitar and began writing songs on it when she was 13. She shares a bit of her earliest effort here. And when she finally picked up an electric guitar, she marked the occasion by forming an experimental side project with her friend, Seema Cunningham, another singer-songwriter guitarist who also had been used to playing acoustic. As Stewart says here, that was something that was exciting to us, the possibility that we could play like that, that we could make a lot of noise. That band Ohm is now known as Phenome, and it's a side project no more. Phenome released one of 2024's best albums, Not God. And one of the highlights of that and the band's live shows is Stewart tearing into her guitar in constant dialogue with Cunningham's guitar, while their voices and musical ideas also intertwine almost telepathically. Macy Stewart takes us from her early Chicago years growing up in a musical household to her music making now with and without Phenome. How did she connect with Cunningham, whom she views as a cool older sister, and who was a Caro Pop guest a few months ago as well? How does Stewart determine whether she's writing a song for Phenome or a solo project? What are the telling characteristics that Stewart and Cunningham each bring to Phenome songs? Stewart digs into the origins of Not God songs, such as Haircut and Cyclops, as well as how Dirt and Naked evolved in the studio with producer Jeff Tweedy. What's it been like to work with Tweedy, who produced not only Not God, but also Stewart's high school band with Cunningham's younger brother, Liam Kazar? How did she wind up playing in Tweedy's band as well? Stewart works on an incredible array of projects, including sound installations and various collaborations. Could these happen only in Chicago? What are her ambitions, artistic or otherwise? Stewart is as open, positive, and inspiring as her music suggests that she would be. Please enjoy this Caro Pop conversation with Macy Stewart. Well, thank you. Hi, Macy. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So you're in Chicago, I assume.
I am in Chicago. I'm in my apartment.
What is your like region of Chicago? What's your like your, if you want to say, you don't have to say.
Yeah, but. No, I'm in Humble Park, which is really great.
Nice.
Yeah, moved here a couple years ago and it's been really fun. I've never lived in a neighborhood where I actually have like, I guess I had neighbors in Avondale, but yeah, it just feels very neighborly. I know a lot of people here and it's really sweet.
Yeah. And that park itself is like awesome.
It's beautiful. The park and the 606. I feel, yeah, it feels super lucky. It's a good spot to be.
Cool. Great. And did you grow up on the Northwest side?
I did. Yeah. I grew up in a neighborhood called Mayfair, which is kind of, it's a really tiny neighborhood. It's like just a basically just a small square to the like west of Albany Park, but like Foster and Pulaski.
Got it. Yeah. And there's like a little forest preserve kind of near there too.
Exactly. Yeah. The bike path starts there, like right across the street from where I grew up. It's a cool neighborhood. I like it.
Do you still have family there?
I do. My parents live in the same house I grew up in, which is, I feel really lucky. I like didn't realize that that was something that other people didn't really have. So
nice. So on your website, it says that you learn to communicate with music while learning to communicate with words. So like, what are your earliest memories of making music?
Earliest memories? I mean, definitely like playing piano in my parents' living room and just making up songs. My parents have, I actually have the piano I grew up playing in my house now.
Nice.
A little upright, like Baldwin spinet piano. But yeah, I used to sit in the living room and just play around on it. And I took classical piano lessons and classical violin lessons. And my mom would make me sit down at the piano with a timer, and I wasn't allowed to get up until the timer went off.
How long was the timer set for?
It incrementally got bigger as I got older, but probably 30 minutes when I was like 5 to like 9, and then like 45 after that, and then an hour. But I just remember thinking I was like getting one over on my mom by being like, I'm practicing piano. And I was just like making up songs and improvising on the piano to fill the 30 minutes rather than practicing the thing I was supposed to be practicing.
But you're practicing something else, you just didn't
But yeah,
realize.
it turns out I was still practicing something else. So I think my mom definitely knew that.
Do you
That was
remember
it.
the first song that you wrote?
First song that I wrote, I don't quite remember. I know that I was in an orchestra in I went to DePaul Community Music for music lessons, and they had like a children's orchestra. And I remember when I was like 11, I wrote a piece for my orchestra. That was like actually the first song that I wrote, but the first like song like on the guitar, I was like 13, and I remember that one too. It was
So
called,
the
I think
first one
it
you wrote, like with lyrics, was when you were 13, but you were kind of composing pieces before then.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I was like I was writing, like improvisational melodic things on the piano, and yeah, and then that piece for the string orchestra, and they performed it. It was really sweet. It
Wow.
was so nice of my orchestra director to like be like, yeah, sure, this 11-year-old can give us music to
Well,
perform.
what did that do for you, seeing an orchestra perform something you wrote?
I mean, it was so cool. It was like, I mean, still to this day, I'm like, that's like one of my favorite things is having, is playing in an orchestra or having an orchestra like perform something that I've made. And I think at that time I was like, this is the coolest thing that could ever happen, and I think it like opened up some ideas for me too, where I was like, oh, I can do this.
I think a lot of musicians, on one hand, have these artistic, visions that have to get up, and on the other hand, have this sort of base insecurity of, oh, what if no one likes it or whatever. And it seems like early on you got like affirmation that I would think would really kind of propel you forward in all of this.
I think that's very true. Yeah, I got a lot of affirmation in that and being like encouraged to continue being creative and writing things and performing. I mean, definitely those things still creep in of being like, no one's gonna like it. I think, every album, every time I put out an album or something, like the month before, I'm like, uh-oh, this is actually horrible. I made something awful and
Yeah.
everyone's gonna hate it. But then, it comes, I think that's part of just the cycle of like of just making something on your own, and you just need to learn to trust yourself. And I do
Yeah.
feel lucky that I had some people early on who were like, oh, you're good. You're doing a good job. Because I think that goes so far, also pardon my cats, they're having a moment.
Oh, I love cats. So,
They're
cat
singing.
moments are good.
They're singing
I
in
want to hear the cat music. What are
the
their names?
Jerry Poppins and Nina Simone.
Simeon. Okay. When you're composing this stuff, when you're 11, are you like arranging things? Like you say, okay, I want, the strings to play this, the
Yeah,
horns to do this.
it was a string orchestra, so it was like I could essentially write like a string quartet. So it was just four parts, and then like a bunch of us would play them. Yeah, so I like wrote it in I probably wrote it in Finale, which is like a program to write out sheet music in. I don't remember exactly, and I'm sure the music is somewhere. I did find it like 6 years ago, and I had just it was like a lost memory to me. And then I found it and I was like, "Oh, whoa." But yeah, I probably wrote it out in Finale, and it's just like a string quartet that was expanded into probably like 30 kids
And when you're coming
playing.
up with these arrangements and these parts, are you thinking of them in your head and then kind of transcribing them onto a keyboard or whatever? Or are you, like actually sitting at the keyboard working them out and then they come to you as your with your hands on an instrument?
I think I was just doing it in my head. I was just doing it in my head. And then when you put it into Finale, you can play it back and it'll play back the song for you. So I think when I was like 11, I would write it in Finale and then I could play it back and then hear if things were weird or not. And it really was just like, I think I had one melodic idea that was like super dramatic sounding. And I was like, yes. And then made that into the piece. But yeah, I think in my head.
I'm going to skip ahead for a moment and then go back to your childhood. But Mouthful of Glass, your solo album, lots of really beautiful orchestral arrangements on that. Are you coming up with those the same way you did when you were a kid? Are is it the same kind of process? Are you sort of thinking of them in your head and then figuring out, how to turn them into sheet music?
Definitely. I mean, when I'm like making string arrangements, I kind of go impulsively, to be honest. I'm just like going as it, I'm playing it as it comes. And like, I'll have a vague idea of something I want to have happen. Like I'll be like, oh, okay, melodically, I think that this would sound really nice here. And I'll record that. And then I'll try to like flesh it out by giving it like a couple more parts, and being like, oh, this like harmonic thing would be cool. And it's kind of a process of like, okay, I have this one idea, and then let's improvise, let's put this down, let's improvise around this. This forms into something more concrete. It's kind of like a little bit like collaging, improvising, and then like locking it in. So I like to compose through like kind of gut instincts. I mean, I think there's a lot of like, then I come in and I kind of like finesse it and make sure that everything is locked in and sounds right and is, the right tone or texture. But I think a lot of my composing comes from just kind of like improvising and just having fun with the music that's there. Because that's like that's the part that gives me the most joy about playing music. And it also is like, through like thinking about how I was learning to play when I was younger, and like even the story that I told you about how I was like improvising to get out of practicing. I'm putting
Right.
practice in quotes. Like that's just like how I've been making things from the very beginning. And I am like trying to continually hone that practice because it feels the most true to me. But yeah, I do it in my head and then just try to play.
Is
Composing, doing.
that similar to how you approach vocal harmonies, by the way? Because it seems like you also like a lot of your choices and a lot of the harmonies are not necessarily what you would quote unquote expect, and which makes them more interesting. But but again, it's kind of this complementary thing to the music that's there that I find really interesting.
Yeah, it definitely, I would say it's the same technique. I'm maybe thinking about it a little differently, like through like where I can comfortably sing or like where something will sound good in my voice, versus like with Sima's voice, and how our voices blend together. So I think about I put that kind of spin on it where I'm like, all right, I'm working with different textures, so what makes more sense compositionally this way? But yeah, in practice it is kind of the same where it's like just kind of figuring out, just playing. I'm always trying to continue to have like fun in the composition process, and explore things and kind of sit in some of those maybe stranger harmonies that might feel initially uncomfortable but are exciting and unexpected, because I think that that's
Right.
like, it's so, I don't know. That's when I'm listening to music or experiencing art, I feel like those are the moments where I'm always like, oh, I love this. So I think when I'm like making things of my own too, I'm like also trying to find those moments or find things that like, maybe I surprise myself by something that I play and I'm like, I'm gonna just keep that there because I didn't expect that to come out and it's gonna lead me into a different direction.
When you were growing up, was there a lot of music in your house?
So much music, yes. My mom is a musician, and she plays piano bar and played around Chicago. She played like before I was born. She was playing on cruise ships and traveling around to different countries and stuff, and playing in hotels and had recorded some music. So she's been a musician since she was a professional musician since she was 9 years old.
Wow.
So Yeah, so a lot of music in my house. My dad is like such a huge fan of music. He was like constantly listening to records, and our family road trips were always like he was the DJ of the family road trip. So we'd always have, and my dad and my mom have completely different music tastes. So it was cool because I got to be exposed to a lot of vastly different kinds of music. My mom was like huge fan of like Carole King and Sheryl Crow and like some really amazing songwriters and like a lot of disco. And my dad is into like Kraftwerk and Devo and like,
Nice.
you know, things like that. So I feel like I got a really good music education in that way. And then I was like learning classical music and Irish music. And so I was kind of just like dipping into everything. And my sister is also an incredible musician. She doesn't really play anymore, but she's fantastic singer and also took piano lessons and was really good at them.
Older or younger?
She's a younger sibling. Yeah. And she went into a creative field too, just not music.
Got it. Do you remember the first album or, record, download, whatever that you got with your own money?
Ooh. Okay, I'm gonna be honest, and this is bad, maybe. I was just like I was into LimeWire. I was lime wiring. So I wasn't buying them. I do now.
Do you remember the first thing that you acquired for yourself?
I definitely remember. Actually, it was probably two things that stick out. One was Simon and Garfunkel. What is it called? It's like the compilation record that they made. It's
Greatest
like
hits.
Friends. No, something Friends, something in Friends.
Old friends.
It might have just been Old Friends, and I used to fall asleep to it every night as a kid, because I just like loved. I loved those songs. So Simon and Garfunkel, Old Friends, and then David Bowie, Hunky Dory. And when I was like, I told my dad that I like love David Bowie, and he like found the whole discography for me. Yeah. So I would say that those are the first two records where I was like, yes.
Is that the era of David Bowie you still like the most?
I think I've maybe like flipped around to like really liking low era David Bowie, but Hunky Dory has a very, very special place in my heart.
Yeah, both good ones.
I mean, even Black Star, I'm like, honestly, that record is in my top three David Bowie records.
Wow.
An amazing record.
Yeah, I know. He went out on quite a note. So, and you started off learning piano classically. When did you move over to guitar?
Guitar, I started teaching myself when I was like 13, I think. You know, when you like kind of discover that guitar exists and that it's cool and that cool people play the guitar, you're like, I gotta do that too.
Did you have guitars sitting around the house or did you have to get a guitar?
No, I had to get a guitar. For Christmas, I got an Ovation, the like round back guitar. And it was an okay instrument. but I learned acoustic guitar. I wasn't very good at it. But I was like, once I got the guitar, then I started writing songs. And I was like super inspired by Fiona Apple, even though I know she was writing on piano, but I was like, I just loved her songs so much. And I started, yeah, just like learning like C, G, A, all the basic chords on the guitar. And kind of like just played acoustic guitar until I got to be like 21, maybe. And then I picked up the electric and I was like, oh, this is fun. And then right around
Right.
then, Phenom started because we were like, let's keep doing this. Because I think Sima kind of had a similar experience. She played maybe more acoustic guitar than I did in high school. But the electric guitar was like, we were just so fascinated by all the textures you could get out of it.
But
And
you
we
were
wanted
fairly new to electric guitar when you started playing with Sima.
for sure. That was like kind of the impetus behind the band was like, okay, we are not really that great at electric guitar. Like what hap but we like know how to play music. So what happens if we like make this our main instrument for this band and our voices? Like what'll happen if we do that? And then yeah, I feel like a good good things happened.
Oh, absolutely. What was that first song you wrote on your acoustic guitar, though?
On the acoustic guitar, it was called, I think it was called Your Eyes. It was not a good song. But it's I'm proud of myself for
So
making that.
how did it go?
Whew. I know there was a part that was like, "Your eyes, they light up my sky." Yeah, it had like some really dramatic chords. I was a little angsty. I was drawn to angsty sounding things. A lot of like dark chords. Yeah.
And by the time you started playing electric guitar, were you pretty good at like picking and moving your way around the fretboard?
No, I was not. I was like, I can sit in one place and we're gonna hope that this works.
Wow. 'Cause you're really good. I mean, I saw you playing for album release for Not God, and you're tearing it up. So it
You.
seems like you're a natural, I don't want to say shredder because that implies this other kind of music, but you're really good at it.
I accept Shredder. I think that was something that was exciting to us, was like the possibility that we could play like that we could make a lot of noise and that we could like learn. We wanted to learn how to play without any lessons, I guess, necessarily. 'Cause I think, when you learn, growing up learning classical piano and classical violin, I learned so much, and I learned a lot of music theory. I learned so much technique, but also sometimes you get stuck in a box. And I feel like that happened to me with piano for a while, and I had to kind of put myself away from it. And that happened with violin too, where I was like, I need to detach myself from these years of training where I was specifically told this is the one way that you can play. And I think that's what was exciting to us about guitar, is that no one had told us there's just one way that you can play. And that enabled us to feel a little bit freer. And yeah, I mean, now I've been playing electric guitar for 10 years and touring on it. So I feel like I now am at a point where I'm like, okay, I've learned a fair amount. I've been like studying this thing and practicing this thing in my own way. And now I kind of feel like I can branch out into other things. I mean, I'm even feeling like, okay, I've boxed myself in with guitar for a bit. I'm like, I need to get new input to like flip my brain around with how to play guitar, or like, I think I'm always searching for something that, I want to feel like there's always like a new avenue to explore.
How important is the guitar interplay between the two of you, as opposed to just, one of you playing rhythm guitar and the other one taking the solo, and having those kind of traditional band roles?
I think it's really important. I mean, we both have very distinct voices, which is something that maybe we were trying to fight against for a little bit, where we were like, oh, like, let's try to really blend it together and be one thing. But I think in the last few years, we've realized like, no, we're like really different people and players, and like being able to have that interplay where like sometimes I'll take the lead, or sometimes Simo will take the lead, or even now, like we have bass in our band, like our friend Vivi Lightbody is playing bass now.
Right.
And we, I used to take on a lot of the bass roles. I would play out of a split signal rig where I had a bass amp and a guitar amp. And I would play with a bass pedal in some songs. And like Simo would fill out the low end in others. But now that we have a bass, it's like, okay, now we can even have some songs where like the two of us are legitimately just like soloing at each other.
Right.
Or like, playing lines that kind of like interplay with each other in a different way. Whereas before we maybe were a little bit more tethered down to like needing to like hold down the fort. So it's, I don't know, it's been, it's, I think it's very integral to our band, being able to have guitar interplay and vocal interplay.
Well, that was the next thing I was going to say, was that it sort of echoes what you guys have been doing with your vocals all along, where, there's songs you sing together in these, interesting harmonies again. And, sometimes one sings more lead and one time the other of you sings lead. But there's a lot of intertwining of it in a way that, again, a lot of bands, this is like, okay, this is her song, this is his song, whatever. And But there's more of a just blending constantly with you guys.
Mark. I appreciate
Well, isn't
that.
that true? I mean,
Yeah, I
sounds like
mean,
it.
I think that's what we hope happens, you know. It's funny to be, someone was saying that to me the other day, and it is funny to be inside of it because I think like we know who wrote a thing, or we know like what things we wrote together, or what our voices sound like as individuals, but being able to step away from it and like, you know, I think we're constantly trying to, it's a conversation. We're trying to be in conversation with each other, or sometimes in argument with each other, or sometimes, you know, I think that there's a lot of push and pull with the way that we combine our musical forces. And I think that's where a lot of the magic of it happens. You know, I think our goal is to have Phenome be like a singular, like it is its own thing.
Right.
We're two very different individual people, and you can hear that in the music, but together we do create like another creature,
Right.
another force. And I think that that's something that's exciting to us because no one could create that on their own. We couldn't create it on our own. We need to be combined for this like other thing to happen.
Yeah, when I was talking to Seema, I was talking about how there's something distinct about like when siblings sing together, even when their voices are very different. And I just saw Seema doing this Roaches show as well, where all three of the Roaches have very different, ranges, but together there's something kind of crazy and telepathic about it. And what I said to her, and I'll say to you too, is that the two of you are not technically siblings and you have different voices, but there's something about the way the two of you are so intuitive in what sounds cool together, and you'll just take these different intervals and kind of wind around each other all the time, that it really does have this sort of like, oh, they're sort of like attached at the hip, or they're siblings, musically, if not, literally.
Yeah, totally. Thank you very much. I mean, I do feel like we're not related, but I do feel like we have that kind of have that special thing that happens with sibling voices or just like voices in a family. And I've been singing with Seema for, we've been in a band for 10 years, but I've been singing with her for 12. And I've also been singing with her brother since I was like 15 or 16.
Yeah, I was
So
going to say you met Liam at Whitney Young, and so that was the original connection, and Seema was just the older sister at that point.
yeah, Seema was like the older, cooler sister, where it was like, wow, she's been in a band. She's cool. Yeah. And so I mean, I think I've been, you know, as a result, I'm like, okay, I do know them very well. So that adds to like being able to kind of work with Seema and like kind of know where she's headed and vice versa.
So what was the point where you realized, hey, I could make music with this older sister and it's going to be pretty cool?
I think it was when we started singing. Yeah, it was when we started singing harmony together. I've been loving Seema's songwriting for a long time. Like when we were in high school, my friends and I loved Seema's records and the music that she was making. And I've always thought that she was an incredible songwriter. And but she was in New York for school. She went to college in New York, so she wasn't in Chicago for a while. And then when she moved back, that's when we started kind of like sometimes she would get hired to sing backing vocals for, we were singing for Chance. And so we would sing together there and be like, oh, okay, actually it's like really easy to sing with you. This feels really natural. Or just like easy to create fun harmony parts. So I think knowing that I loved her songs and then knowing that we could sing well together, that idea was kind of sparked in our mind. And she also helped open Constellation, which is one of my favorite deer spots in Chicago,
Right.
and was also like the first place I was introduced to, like free jazz and experimental music and free improvisation. And it kind of like blasted my mind open into oblivion, where I was like, oh my God, there, I think I figured out like how I want to make music. Like I don't have to just play classical piano or like be in, you know, a band where there are specific parts that I have to play every time. And I think those three things, like knowing I loved Sima's music, knowing we could sing well together, and then kind of like starting to go to Constellation together. We were both like, ooh, this could be fun. Like, we're both interested in exploring this thing. You like my songs, I like your songs. And so it kind of just developed that way. And we didn't intend for it to be a long-term thing. We kind of wanted to just make a record because she had a studio. And so we were like, let's do it. Like, that's fun. And so we just made a record. And, but then people were like, you should keep doing it. And we were like, well, we're having fun. So if you want us to keep doing it, we'll keep
Sure.
doing it. Like, we want to keep doing it. I just didn't know that anyone else wanted us to.
So what was the first Om Phenom song that you guys did, and how did that work?
It was called You, Your Face. It's on our first record. And I still go back to that song and I'm like, wow, I am really proud of that. I think sometimes you make things and you go back and you're like, okay, I see what you were trying to do there. But I feel like that's a song where I'm like, dang, we created something really special. And it was a lot more ambient and a lot more stretched out and like kind of set a scene for the song to exist inside of. And it's a really long song too. It's probably like 7 minutes long, but it's just like this epic, beautiful, really reverbed out textural song. And we didn't have drums on that one. We played drums on our first record ourselves too. Oh, I guess that song does have drums. It just has toms. But yeah, we played all the instruments ourselves and just kind of like made a thing. And it was without any expectations of what it would be. And I think that that was like the most powerful part of it, is just making something because we wanted to explore making something.
Pop is supported by Revolution Brewing, Illinois' largest independent brewery. Revolution's great offerings include the classic Anti-Hero IPA, the non-alcoholic sparkling hop water Super Zero, and the premium lager Cold Time. No matter the weather, Cold Time hits the spot. It's an all-malt beer featuring Midwest two-row barley, Mexican lager yeast, a touch of German hops, and pure Great Lakes water. It's never pasteurized, and the brewed low and slow badge on the can attests to a lower temperature fermentation that mellows the beer for a smoother, more flavorful sip. Did you originally go into this thinking, oh, this is like our little side experimental project, and then you started creating these songs, and then people were like, oh, we really like these songs. This is much more accessible than I think you intended.
Yes, 100%. I mean, we were like, we're just making up stuff. Like, we're just, I think we were having fun and exploring and experimenting with like playing instruments we didn't know how to play and like, doing different techniques that we didn't ha hadn't previously done. And yeah, I think we were surprised that it was more accessible than we thought. And it we definitely thought of it as a side project at first, but then it became increasingly evident that it was not a side project. And I think once that happened, then we were like, let's go.
Right. And I saw you also playing with Jeff Tweedy and his solo band. You guys were there a few times. How did that help you guys, or what did that do for you, just sort of like having that role on that stage with him and those songs?
Yeah, I mean, I love Jeff's songs. I mean, that's another person who, like, listening to his music, I'm like, oh my God, I wish I could make things like that. Or there are songs where I'm like, wow, I see myself inside this, So it was a really special thing to be asked to be a part of Tweety. I also didn't expect that. Like, Sima and Liam had been a part of it for a while. And then Sima got asked to do it probably like 2016, and then had been a part of the Tweety band for a while since then. And in like 2021-ish, maybe 20, late 2020, I think early 2021. I kind of, he just asked me, he was like, "What's your calendar look like?" And I was like, "I'm kind of free." And he's like, "Okay, add Macy to the calendar." And then I'm just like,
Nice.
which was really cool. And I think like that's been really fun too, getting to play Jeff's songs because I love them so much, and also getting the freedom to make some more vocal parts with Seema in like another context. I think that's been really special too, and feeling free to do that. Like in the Tweety band, I play violin and I sing. And it's been really fun to write parts for that and explore, like, yeah, just another person's songwriting and like what happens if we put our thing into this context.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he produced Not God. Like what does he bring to what you guys are doing?
I mean, he is a great out-of-the-box thinker and a great arranger. Like, I think there are a lot of circumstances where like we would write something and it would feel like, we just didn't know what direction to go, and he would crack it open in a way that would allow us to like, it would kind of force us to think about the song in a different way, which I think is really cool and really important when making a record too, because sometimes you get stuck in demo land. We call it like demoitis, where you record a thing one way just to mark it down, but then you kind of get stuck in that headspace sometimes for a little bit. I find that that happens with songs a lot, and I think he's good at like going in and like just like cracking it open. And he's also great at like, he brought a lot of fun to, I feel like I keep saying the word textures, but yeah, he brought a lot of fun textures to it. There were like instruments we had never seen before, making sounds we had never heard before, and like that would spark new ideas. And he was good at just like bringing in an element that would like make us think about something in a different way. And it was cool too, because my band with Liam that we had in high school, Kids These Days, he also produced part of a record that we made when I was like 19, 18 or 19. And it was really fun to like get to make another record with Jeff again,
Years later.
a decade down the line, and yeah, kind of know how he operates, but also put it into this very different context. And knowing him better and knowing ourselves better, like I feel like it was an exciting thing. And like the loft just sounds so good. Everything they record there just sounds so good. And I think that was also really important to us. We wanted every element to sound interesting.
Right. Like what songs on Not God sort of transformed the most from, when you brought him in and then started, actually getting him down?
The song Dirt transformed a lot because we had he was really good at in the second verse, the chords change in a very, very weird way that is so satisfying to me. And Jeff sparked that happening. And I think without that, the song would be kind of, I mean, the song would still be really cool, but I think it was a little bit more monotonous. And I think by having, by bringing it into Jeff, he flipped around some of the chord changes, and then we messed around with it right back. And it created this, I don't know, this, I feel like Dirt is so satisfying, but also one of the most uncomfortable things to listen to, because it is really in a good way, in like the best way, because it really, there's something uneasy about it and beautiful. And I think that came from those sessions specifically. And I also think like the end of Naked too, like actually so much of that song, so many of the textures that we used on it, I think that was one where I was nervous that it would be a struggle to figure out how to make it sound right. I couldn't put my finger on what it was, but I was like, I don't know how to get there, and I don't know what we need to get there. And I feel like Jeff did a really good job, again, like getting some of those chord changes at the end. He put a lot of, he made us change a lot of the chords at the end of that song. And in a way that felt awesome. Like it opened it up into this new world that I like probably wouldn't have thought about. And now that I'm, you know, now writing songs after those sessions, I'm like keeping some of those things in mind too, where I'm like, oh yeah, that was a really cool exercise to do, where it's like, okay, we, you know, we have this melody. How do we attach the chords to the melody rather than attach the melody to the chords? Like just kind of playing little games, little arrangement games in that way. But yeah, I think like Dirt and Naked, they changed a lot on this.
Nice. When you're writing, do you set out to like, I'm gonna write a solo song now. Oh, I'm gonna write a Phenom song now. Or do you sort of write stuff and then you think, you know, I think this is veering more into Phenom territory. And then when you get together, it's a compound question. And then when you get together with Sima, do you come in with complete songs or do you come in with like, hey, I have this idea, let's pound this out?
It's a little bit of all of it. I mean, when I'm writing a song, I definitely am not thinking about who it's going to be for. I'm like, I just need to write the right thing. Like, I just need to write the truest thing in the moment. And sometimes it's bad and I don't give it to anyone. Or sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, this maybe could be a cool Macy song or a cool Sima song or something else. It's actually gotten a little more difficult, I think, as time has gone by, to be like, I don't know which. At least for me, where I'm like, I don't know which one's for what. And sometimes it's nice to just bring them all to Sima or bring a few things to Sima, because sometimes Sima's like, I can't find myself in this song. So I don't think, you know, that's a big part of it too, is like, is Sima able to find herself in a song that I've written, or am I able to find myself in a song that she's written? That kind of determines it maybe a little bit more than just like, oh, I think this is here, you know, because sometimes you don't know. But yeah, we'll bring each other. Generally, we bring pretty finished songs, but sometimes there'll be like a snippet of an idea where it's like, I think that this is really cool. But I'm not able to like complete a chorus for it. And I want to write that together. I think that happened with Hungry, which was a really beautiful experience, because I feel like I wrote the verses for Hungry and I had a completely different interpretation of what they meant, and they meant something very important to me and deep to me. And I couldn't figure out a chorus for it. And Sima and I wrote a chorus together, and then through like playing the song multiple times, we realized like, oh, this song means completely different things to both of us, but also kind of the same thing. Like, I don't know, it was really cool to like write something with someone and have two different interpretations that live together in the same way.
Right. And that one stretches out too. It like sort of builds an intensity as you go along.
Yeah, exactly.
So were those words yours that you brought in? Was it now I only feed myself? So yeah, no, it's I love that song. Is there a difference in sensibility in general? Like if there's kind of like a dark, twisted lyric in there, is it more likely to be one of you than the other one? Like they were kicking my teeth out one by one, like
Oh
something
yeah.
like that, which is on Cyclops.
That's like a seam. Yeah, that's definitely a seam. I think she tends to go in the more like surrealist direction, and I tend to be, you know, sometimes be a little more internal. But I think as we've like been writing for the last 10 years together, and then just on our own, I think our songwriting styles, you know, we definitely have different sensibilities, but I think there are moments of overlap where like, yeah, we both, you know, the reason we love playing together is because we both love this idea of like darkness and light superimposed on top of each other, and this like constant push and pull of both of those things. But yeah, I think Sima's very good at a surrealist lyric. I have a hard time like knowing what, like being able to look at my stuff and being like, what is it that makes that mine? Because I kind of don't know. I think part of my process is figuring it out as I go. I think songwriting helps me process. So I think that's how
Sure.
writing styles are different. I'm less telling a story. I'm more like, what? I don't honestly don't know what I'm feeling right now, so I have to like put something out there and see if it reflects back to me. And I think Sima's very good at like storytelling.
So, like Cyclops, what was the story behind that one?
That was a Sima song, and it's kind of, I think it ended up being just about the journey of being in a band
Right.
and music, and the chorus for it that came a little bit later, which was really fun because we were just like trying to figure out what to. We were like, we need another part for this, and then that came out of Sima's mouth, and we were like, that's really funny, and that's really good actually. We should keep that in there. Nobody cares about your band
Right. It's
because
hilarious.
it's so tongue in cheek, and it's so like, I think in my interpretation of it, I was like, yeah, I need to like stamp my ego down a little bit where I'm like, nobody cares. Just like fucking do it anyway. But I think it also means this other thing where it's like, yeah, nobody cares. And it's like a, I don't know, it feels empowering, honestly, to sing it for some reason. But it's also such a funny lyric. Yeah. Thinking about it too, I'm like, it reminds me of a lot of the Roaches songs, how they would like, write things that are tongue in cheek and really funny. And I think, yeah, Sima's definitely influenced by
Right.
Roach.
Like the death of Suzy Roach. But so what about haircut?
Haircut. That came from a writing exercise I was doing with my friend Namdi over the pandemic, where we would choose words and send them back and forth to each other and make each other text predict a paragraph. And then we would write a song around the paragraph. So Namdi gave me the word passing. So I wrote passing, and then I just kept clicking the buttons on the text prediction in our like text message chat to each other. And it wrote out that this paragraph that like kind of didn't make sense, but sort of made sense. And I wrote a song around it in just in Logic. And I used like basically the keyboards that I had because this was like deep 2020. Like I was in my house alone in the winter. I just started living alone. I was like, it was a really insane time. But this like song exercise we were doing with each other was really fun. And then eventually, we were like, me and Sima were talking about songs that we wanted to do for Not God. Before it was called Not God, we were like, what songs would be fun to like, what are we excited about? And I like brought that one up and I was like, we should try making this into a Phenom song because it essentially is a Phenom song. We just aren't playing it. And so we like kind of arranged it on our own. And when we went to record it, I was like, okay, should I write new lyrics for it? Like, I know it's kind of like just text prediction lyrics and everything. But we realized like that was kind of the magic of the song was that it was nonsensical, but it was also like based on actual things that I had said and written, which was like me trying to be like, no, sorry, I can't go to that. Or like, I have to stay inside. Or like, I can't go hang out. Like, this need to be like totally like, making excuses for why you can't do things. And I thought it was funny that the text prediction caught on to that a little bit.
It is funny because it's like the words make sense, but they're also like you would never write them like that because,
Yeah.
but it's also like a totally groovy, like dancey song. Like you wanted to sort of get down to it. Was that in mind the whole time, or did that sort of come out of the arrangement?
That was in mind the whole time. I think so many of the songs on the record, we wanted them to feel groovy. I think we were really, I know I was really into music that was just like, it had a great groove and just stuck with it all the way to the end. Like classic krautrock records or like, any of those funk records. Like you just choose one groove that feels really good and you go with it. I think trying to be a little bit more simple. I think some of our past records, we've had really good groovy songs, but I think we kind of were. And we were compositionally like trying to find different spaces to exist in, and I think that that was really cool. And I enjoyed that too, but I think we just wanted to explore what happened if we were just grooving for a bit, because that feels, it feels so good when you're performing it too. And I think we wanted to make a record that felt really like good to perform.
Yeah.
So
Are your happiest times in making music on stage or recording?
apples and oranges. I really like both. I think I need both. If I do too much of one, I feel off balance. I love performing so much. I think it's one of the most fun things in the world. But being in the studio, making something, crafting something. Actually, I think I enjoy being in the studio alone sometimes more than with multiple people. But on stage, I'm like, I want to be with everyone. I think stage is like my, it's like the most collaborative place for me. But I think I do really enjoy being in the studio and just exploring things on my own. Like I can sit in front of my computer for like 10 hours, which is maybe not awesome, but like I can really get into it.
You know what you're doing when you're in with whatever studio you are, so you can kind of use that as your sandbox and create whatever you're going to create.
Yeah, exactly. And I have a small home studio, and I think I didn't have that pre-2020. I had to go somewhere else to record things, and I think having my own space in my house has like unlocked a lot of creative juices. It's helped them start flowing a little bit more and made it like a much more fun space to be in. I think maybe I didn't feel that way about the studio like 6 or 7 years ago, but now I'm like, no, it's actually like, it's like a, yeah, it's a sandbox.
I'd seen that you were playing at Constellation in August, and I think you put up, I may play all new songs. Did you?
I did.
So what are all these new songs? Is this like another Macy solo album? Are these possible Phenom songs, or are these I don't know what they are songs?
I think it's a combination of both. Yeah, I've been writing a lot. The last few years have been very, very creatively fulfilling, and I've been making a lot of things. And yeah, I had about like 20 songs, maybe even more. And I was like, I wanted to challenge myself to play some new things, because I'm not really, I'm kind of done with the Mouthful of Glass album cycle. And I was playing solo, so it wasn't a space to play new Phenom songs or like our Phenom songs. So I was like, I want to try it out. I think you learn a lot about a song through playing it in front of people, because it kind of puts a different kind of spotlight on it.
So Mouthful of Glass is acoustic with, you know, these orchestral arrangements, string, horn, whatever. No drums on it, I don't think. And then, you know, Phenom, there's a lot going on with percussion and drums and electric instruments and stuff. Do you see that split continuing, or would the next Macy solo record maybe have drums or electric guitar on them, but just be different?
I think it might have drums. I'm interested in putting drums on it because I learned that when I was touring it, it was very fun to play solo and have it be really quiet, and I still want to maintain some of that, but I did miss the element of like, yeah, I miss the element of drums a little bit, and I think I want to have the option to have that in the future. So I think whatever my next song record is, will probably have drums. But who's to say? I think the thing that I want the most from my solo project is like freedom to make what I want to make at any point in time. And like being able to have it encompass a lot of different things. So I think I'm trying with whatever record comes next, just trying to figure out how to like continue placing all these pieces that I have put in different parts of my life and figuring out how to connect them all and continue exploring like some of these themes, and drums might be included in that.
Do you and Sima have specific ambitions for Phenom in terms of, all right, like this is how we're mapping out the arc of our band career, and we're gonna tour and then we're going to do a record and we're going to do this, that. I mean, is there any sort of planning like that, or is it more like, well, we'll just see what happens?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think we've had moments where we're like, all right, we need to plan this out entirely. We want it to go specifically this way. And I think the moments where we are forcing ourselves to go in a specific direction is the moments where it feels like the most frustrating or like it's not working. And the moments where we're like, let's just see what we make and like be honest about like how much like capacity we have or like when we can tour and like all of these things, that's when it feels the most like generative and exciting. Like we're going to Europe in February and we're going to be in Finland for a week and we're going to just make some things with our friends. And that seems really exciting to me to be able to just have this like freedom, like set aside this time to be like, this is when we're working. So I think, you know, we want to be able to continually tour, but you know, maybe not like 8 week long tours, a bunch of them in a row, like we've done in the past. I think we're trying to be a little bit smarter about like where we're going and what our time looks like. Yeah, just continuing to make space to make things that are interesting to us, and not make them because we feel like we have to, or we feel like someone's telling us that we have to. And yeah, I think that's always been the goal in my career.
Do you see Phenom as your main thing, or is there not that kind of hierarchy?
I think I'm learning that there's not that kind of hierarchy. I think at times it is my main thing. And I would say like a majority of the time, like this past year, it was like Phenom 100%. But I think, yeah, I think things like you have to allow them a little bit of space to shift priority. And I would say that there's not a hierarchy for me right now. I mean, maybe Phenom's at the top. Phenom's definitely at the top. But
And you and Seema have done a lot of collaborations. I mean, you've done these sound installations, you've been on, her record, other records. She's done all this different stuff as well. Like, how important is it to you to be somewhere where collaboration is just built into the culture?
I would say it's of utmost importance to me. It's the most important thing to me. I think because music and making music and making things has been such a deep part of my life since I was very small. It is the thing that feels like the most deep communication to me. Like I think making things in collaboration with someone is a form of like, yeah, a very vulnerable form of sharing and communicating, and one that feeds me a lot and helps me feel like I'm like creating relationships with people and maintaining relationships with people. And I think that, yeah, I think collaboration will always remain a part of me. And I think that in making a solo record, I learned how important it was to me, actually. Like through needing to do something on my own, or kind of making myself create the parameters where I had to do something on my own, it did help me realize how important collaboration is to me and how much I want to keep that as part of my practice, in whatever I'm doing. And I think deeply rooted collaborations, like my collaboration with Seema or my friend Leah Cole, who I've been making music with for like 6 or 7 years. Those collaborations with time become even more important. I think because there's so much history and so much depth there that it becomes like, yeah, it's exciting. And it, you know, I think you have to be pulled out of your own head sometimes, or see things reflected back at you differently, in order to grow.
Is Chicago particularly conducive to this, and would you always want to stay here?
I would say yes, it is. I mean, I definitely would like to go somewhere for a little bit of time, only because I've never lived anywhere else. I've only ever lived in Chicago. But I've traveled a lot, and Yeah, I think Chicago stands out as a really like particularly special place for collaboration. I think because it's affordable to live here generally, and there is a, there's enough space for people to practice and get together and make things together. And it's also centrally located, so there's a lot of people that like can base themselves here and then move outward. And there's such a deep history of like incredibly creative music, from like AACM was here and is still here making music and like kind of like putting forth this like incredible ethos of free jazz and improvisation, and just like ways to work. And there's some really great collaborative venues that are here. I think places like Constellation, places like Elastic Arts, and Experimental Sound Studio in Ravenswood, like these places like make a space for music that like kind of doesn't have a space in other places in the United States. And I think also everyone here, because there isn't a ton of industry here, like music industry, I think it creates a freedom a little bit, like you're able to maybe get yourself off of the ladder that I'm putting up again, but off of the ladder that sometimes you feel like you have to adhere to.
You're not taking meetings all the time in town, so you're thinking more about creativity than, the next commercial opportunity or something.
Yeah, totally. And like, I mean, obviously we all still have to make rent, but like we don't have to make like $2,000 a month to live in an apartment that doesn't have windows, Like I don't know. It's just like there's something about Chicago that feels very potent, collaboratively, and I think that that allows for really interesting things to be made. And I feel very lucky that I got to grow up here.
Yeah. Well, I feel lucky I get to experience it all here. So, not that this is just a Chicago podcast. It's awesome to get to talk to you and to have seen and heard you over many years already. And I really appreciate you coming on and talking to me about this.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me. I really appreciate it. It's super lovely.
That's all for episode 165 of Caropop. Thanks so much to Macy Stewart for being so open while taking us inside her musical brain and everything springing from it. Stewart has a solo date at Chicago's Judson & Moore on February 22nd, and she'll perform at the Big Ears Festival in Knoxville, Tennessee on March 30th. You can find her tour information, watch her videos, and learn more about her at macystewart.com. She also has more tour dates coming up with Phenome, including January 30th through February 2nd in Copenhagen, Denmark, and Germany. Phenome will be back in the U.S. for a tour starting February 28th in Urbana, Illinois, and running through April 27th in Los Angeles. Go to phenomemusic.com for more information, and pick up Not God and the band's earlier albums while you're at it. Follow Macy Stewart on Instagram at Macy Stewart, and be on the lookout for an announcement about a new project soon. Also, listen to Seema Cunningham's Caropop episode from last fall so you can complete the Phenome picture. Caropop is produced by Chris Swake, who can get his haircut any time of day. If you'd like to throw something in the Caropop tip jar, we'd be much appreciative. Please go to caropop.com and you can give $24 or whatever you'd like. Thanks so much for listening and being here. I'm Mark Caro. Please follow Caropop on Blue Sky, Instagram at CaroPopCast, and you can follow me as well at Mark Caro at MarkCaro. Please share this episode, subscribe, tell your friends, and tune in again next week for another Caropop conversation. Thanks.